right, folks, we've been cleared for takeoff. Give me a hell, give me a yell. Stand up right now and give me a hell, give me a yell. Stand up right now, get ready to go. She ain't moving slow, she's taking control. Pushing the pedal through the floor. I'm begging for more, you better hold on tight.
Hey, welcome to Alouettes Flight Deck, the podcast dedicated to Montreal Alouettes football. I'm Tim Capper, along with Cliffy D. I think we've had too many. You know, maybe we should have. You know what we should have done? We should have played Kirk Cousins last week, because then maybe they would have won. Because, you know, supposedly it's the Kirk Cousins jinx.
There's still time.
There's still time. Anything at all to turn this train wreck of a season around.
Oh, no. We suck again.
Where do you want to start? The game was just so inconsequential. It really, really was. It just led to whatever happened, which was a total surprise, not only to you, a couple of friends, you know, and I saw it come up on Twitter, and I was like, what the blue blank is going on? Luckily, you know, the Alouettes hadn't scored, by the way. They threw three quarters. I think the last time that they had gone three quarters without scoring a point was – I had it on Twitter. Either way, it's futile. But at least they didn't go to that futile point, you know, being shut out for the first time since 1997. It was that close to being posted, literally that close. And if nobody remembers that game, it was the game at Edmonton where the Owls got shut out 32-0.
Yeah, just what more can be said? I mean, like this whole season, I'm at a loss for words, really. I mean, I keep saying that, but I end up finding words, and most of them are swear words. And shout out to Eskimo Empire. I know you all love the lunatic, but I'm really going to try my best to keep my wits about me. That being said,
yeah, I had a hell of a time doing editing last week. It's like, oh crap, I missed one, and luckily I went back and found it. I had to check my my listing here of times. Okay, you know what? This is basically what it was. The Alouettes scored a grand total of 8 points in the fourth quarter last week. The 2 points itself, really, on the safety itself, it was big because of a penalty in the end zone where it was grounding.
Yeah.
Now,
which, as anyone who watches football knows, intentional grounding while you're in the end zone is automatically a safety. Mm-hmm.
And then they got the touchdown on, which was through help from a challenge on a pass interference call. And everybody, you know, everybody on Twitter who were watching the game, they're like, well, why are they calling this? Well, it's like they need to try something. You know, sometimes this wasn't frivolous. You know, frivolous calls I find that have really stopped. The only one that really bugged me, and we'll get about this a little bit later, was something that the league really needs to change. And a lot of people are pointing this out. Is the call away from the ball on the what was it? It was illegal hands on a receiver. I think it was on Chip Cox. And it was away from the ball, and they challenged it. I'm like, dude, you're up 20-0 or whatever it was, and you're trying this now. Anyways, we'll get to that a little bit later. But I think that really what says it all is, and I just don't understand why. You know, Rakeem Cato, 13-29, lowest percentage so far this year at 44.8%, 124 yards. You had no interceptions, but no TDs.
Nope. And once again, getting ragdolled because this offensive line for the Alouettes has just been, I'd say horrendous, but I mean, I think even horrendous might be considered a compliment compared to what we really truly think of them. I mean, this is just a bad, bad, bad offensive line. And it's so unfortunate because, again, I want to say the talent's there. I mean, like Jeff Parrott, absolute class guy, one of the best in the league. I mean, he's just getting straight up owned by a lot of these defenders. Christian Matt, he was put in a tough situation trying to replace Luc Brodeur-Jourdain to start the season. And to his credit, he's actually done a very solid job, all things considered. But even too, he's been like getting overwhelmed a little bit too. And we won't even go into the whole tip drill into his hands, and then he fumbles it and turns the ball over for Calgary. That was, I mean, again, these things happen. The guy's not a receiver, so I'm not going to fault him too much for that. But wow, I mean, like poor Christian is just he's making the best of a bad situation too. I mean, and to his credit, he stepped up when he's had to. Mm-hmm. But I mean, like otherwise, pretty much everybody else on that line is just getting their lunch eaten for them on a consistent basis, and I just don't see any end in sight for that. And the real drawback, the real liability, you know, for this is just what's going to happen with, as we've seen now in recent weeks, with Rakeem Cato. The guy is just getting, like I said, ragdolled. I mean, he's getting sacks left, right, and center. And yeah, a lot of these sacks could have been prevented if he just knew how to throw the ball away. But more often than not, he's getting bull rushed and just, like I said, planted on the ground. So, I mean,
he's the complete opposite of an AC sack. He's completely opposite. You know, AC was known for turtling. I don't know what you would call what a cream. that was really bad. Rakeem Cato, what his sacks are called, but he just goes down. The dude just goes down. I mean, also doesn't help too. I mean, Alouettes had 121 total yards net offense, averaging 2.3 yards a play. You can't, there had to be, and considering. Okay, let's get to the positive, because I was just annoyed the entire second half. There should have been a change by Coach Chapdelaine at halftime, period. Something to spark the team, and it wasn't done. What was done was the next day, or the day after that.
Yeah, after the fact.
Yeah. But you know what? To be fair, you know, as we know, with it coming up later on this month, I think they're gonna start announcing who the team MVPs are for the, you know, year-end awards. And I'm hoping a lot of them come from the defense. Because if you look to what this team did in the first half with this powerful offense, you know, that they were going up against, they held them. I mean, what halftime, it was fantastic. It was only 9-0. 9-0. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, with the, you know, the Alouettes, with their, if they don't score more, they're 9 or less points, they suck. They've sucked in their history when they have that many points at less, you know, that between that point at halftime. But they were in the game. They've been in game so many times this year. They did what they needed to do. You know, just 9 points they gave up.
I mean, and this is against a very high powered Calgary offense.
Exactly. And I think they got a compliment tweet. Who did they get it from the Calgary? They got a compliment tweet saying that this is the best defense that has played us all year.
That was actually Jerome Messam, former Montreal Alouette, Jerome Messam, who tweeted that out.
Yeah. So it shows they have half of what they need. Other than that, no. It's just so frustrating. Now, let me ask you, what do you think is your thought pattern on why the hell they did not bench Cato for the second half and put in Adams Jr.?
Maybe they're hoping he'd get injured. Seriously, I really think Jacques Chapdelaine, I've heard rumblings that he was not terribly impressed with Rakeem Cato right from the get-go. And I really think, and maybe this is kind of how things are now, is that let's just give – if you give someone enough rope, sooner or later they're going to hang themselves. And I really think that's kind of what it was with Chapdelaine, was that he wanted to give Rakeem Cato every opportunity to redeem himself or – dig himself in a deeper hole, which it's clear that he's pretty much done that now. And I think this was just the right opportunity to say, you know what, hey, I gave Rakeem as many opportunities as possible and it just isn't working, so now we're going to go in a different direction. We're going to let Vernon Adams take over and let's see what he can do now. And I can't help but think that maybe this was the whole plan for Chapdelaine when it comes to the quarterback situation here in Montreal.
Maybe they didn't think he had enough reps. Maybe. I mean, but that's never stopped teams from switching over. And I think a huge thing this year is when it comes to backup quarterbacks. Some teams have them. Some teams have a plethora of them. Others who don't look at their future properly, the Owls being one of them, just are having a hell of a time. Now, obviously we do have a winnable game coming up this week, but the thing is that this is not the same Saskatchewan Rough Riders team that got shellacked in Montreal. We'll talk about that in a couple of minutes. But obviously, again, just very frustrating alone. For the first time, I think, is in a CFL career, you know, Jerron Carter did not get a catch in a game.
Yeah, I mean, barely any looks even. It was remarkable.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one of the guys that was supposed to be the stars of this team offensively, and the guy that has to be your go-to. I mean, from what I saw, he wasn't really being covered all that much either. So, I mean, is it just not getting the looks? Is it not what is it exactly? That's what I would have liked to have known.
Yeah. And also, we had the return of Boris Bidding. We really did not get to see what he learned during his time of being relegated to the injured list. Sorry, quote unquote injured list, because he didn't try a single field goal. So the jury is still out on him, considering that he is going to be our kicker for the rest of the year, by the looks of things.
Well, and that was always a plan. The plan was always to have Boris Bede to be the guy. And yes, he did have that mental block where things were just absolutely terrible. And again,
I'm still calling it a mental block.
Call it what you will, but
it's like he had his foot amputated.
It would certainly explain some of these god awful kicks of his earlier this year, but. And again, maybe this is one of those cases. Like I said, I take a look at Liram Hirulahu. Absolutely outstanding rookie campaign for the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. Sophomore season was complete garbage. It was just terrible. And they ended up letting him go. He signed with Toronto, and he's, for the most part, redeemed himself. Still hasn't been perfect, but I'd say he's back on track. So I sincerely hope, for Bede's sake, that it's going to be the same for him, that he will, maybe this time off for injury, quote-unquote, mm-hmm. or what have you, hopefully this has really helped sort of, I guess taught him a lesson or helped him learn a little bit more, get a new perspective, if you will. And come next season, he comes back to training camp and he's got that renewed vigor, just like what Hirulahu had.
I would hope, and with the way that Anthony Farrah played, I hope they give him a good shot. Like, they give him a good look next year, because just the way that it was decided, how it was going to be done, he was, he was the guy. And, obviously based on his great campaign last year. But then again, they sort of screwed themselves when they, you keep one of the best – what is he now? He is one of the best kickers now in the CFL. When they keep Sean White for a couple of weeks on the practice roster, it's like White was the redheaded stepchild compared to, Boris Bede. And I know it's karma. It's karma. All this crap that's happening, I think, is karma. I love the Isles to death, but it's karma. It's karma for all the crap that they have, and all the planning that they haven't done.
You reap what you sow.
So after the game, obviously, I think everybody is just ticked off. I mean, absolutely ticked off. I'm surprised there wasn't more people tweeting about it on social media. But then the bomb drops, and I don't know. It's something that I saw. It was early on Monday, and I'm like, WTF is going on? First you see this very cryptic tweet from Jerron Carter, and then you see the one from Kenny Stafford, and I'm like, what the hell? And then it comes out. Sure enough, they've both been released by the Owls. Because the Owls says, if anybody doesn't know, the Owls are staying this week in Calgary, and then they're going to be going over to Saskatchewan, I think, on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't have to make the trip. So, and it's, hey, props to the guys over at TSN 690. They were able to get and listen and get and speak with Deron basically right after it happened. And you know what's funny, Cliff, is that for a guy who's been released, usually he's always been able to say the right thing. Deron's always been able to keep himself composed, unless, there are, except in practice when there are cameras around. But he's always seems very, very composed. And that's what he was. He's very composed in his interview, putting no blame on anybody. Basically saying, that's football. Now, what's your thought on this? Because I don't know. I didn't think that we would be taking a page from the Toronto Argonauts playbook this year.
Certainly not in that regards, anyways. To tell you the truth, it's kind of a tough call for me, because I'm still truly not convinced that Carter nor Kenny Stafford were the problems in Montreal. I know that they were sort of, I guess, embroiled in this whole melee brouhaha with Rakeem Cato, especially earlier on, and from what I saw of the game on Saturday, this past Saturday, a lot of people were saying that it looked like Carter or Stafford were really paying all that much attention or really seeming to care. And I still have a hard time believing that because I've gotten to know these guys pretty well. I mean, I've known both Duron and Kenny since they were both on the practice roster here in Montreal. And one thing I'll never, ever dog them on is the way they prepare themselves. I mean, these guys definitely are gamers in every sense of the word. And they come prepared and they're ready to go. I mean, I know Duron rubs people the wrong way just with his personality. And I can understand that. There's a lot of people that just are going to think the worst about him. And I've come to his defense a number of times in the past. And I'm very happy to do so because I really have gotten to know Duron and Kenny as well. And they're just both, as far as I'm concerned, both outstanding individuals. I'll never take anything away from them for what they do on the field or off the field. I still think that they are absolutely tremendous talents, and someone will snap them up and, God willing, put them to good use because, I mean, especially Kenny Stafford. I mean, the guy's a Grey Cup champion, first and foremost.
Just a year removed from being a Grey Cup champ.
Yeah.
Not even a year.
I mean, I just really think that it's this whole situation. I mean, it's I'm sure once this season is over, we're going to look back on a lot of things and we can sort of pinpoint those exact moments where things just really, truly fell apart and kept falling apart as well. So, I mean, it's tough. I kind of get where Chapdelaine's coming from in trying to, I guess, show that this is his locker room. He wants to really establish himself as a leader. And again, he doesn't owe these guys anything, quite frankly. I mean, at the end of the day, this is his chance to prove that he belongs as a head coach in the Canadian Football League. So, and he's not making these moves too without both Jim Popp and the Wettenhall family signing off on them as well. So, I mean, like, if nothing else, they've got his back. So, I mean, they've got to really believe in him to give him the confidence to make these moves. To me, though, I just think it's how can I put this? It's you're getting rid of the cancerous tumor, if you want to call it that. But I think you're going to find later on that that was actually a benign tumor, and you just open things up essentially for nothing. It's still not going to cure the problem. It's still not going to cure the disease that's going on in Montreal. These guys were just byproducts of a really, really lousy system that's in place. And whether or not it's going to get better or not, only time's going to tell. Like I said, I think this offseason, you've said it before, is going to be very interesting for a lot of reasons. I definitely think that, and I've talked about this yesterday on Twitter, I kind of went off on a bit of a rant, and there's just going to have to be like a wholesale cleansing of this team from top to bottom. I think a lot of people are just going to have to be shown the door, and we're just going to have to do like what Saskatchewan did, is just bring in brand new everything, start from scratch, and if that means another losing season, then so be it, but put a proper system in place. Enough of this country club nonsense, enough of trying to make people happy within the organization, and stop believing in people that just don't belong here. And again, I still think that Kenny Stafford and Duron Carter should still be a part of this team, but I have to believe if this is how Chapdelaine feels, and if this is essentially how the organization feels as well, if this is what they have to do to get themselves better, to get to that good place again, then, well, they did what they had to do. That's all there is to it.
Yeah, but remember also that I don't know. It's just hard to just describe what I'm thinking is that, I mean, what is to say that, you know, what Coach Chapdelaine is doing now is not the owner, is the ownership basically saying, you know what, we've made these choices, you're going to be the head coach next year, which I'm sure if we were to ask them that question, that's not the case. They had to make these choices and they were tough choices. Now, the thing is, though, was it really necessary to get rid of them both? I mean, we do have some good wide receivers that are on the practice roster that we're going to be starting this week, and we want to see how they do. But was it really necessary to release both of them? I mean, sure. You know, combined, I think they were 0-7 in targets this week, those two. Mm-hmm. Both no yards. B.J. Cunningham is an up-and-comer. It makes you wonder what would happen if we still had SJ this year.
That's probably once we look back at this year, that'll probably be the biggest what if, is what if SJ Green didn't go down to injury.
Right. Now, to my question, though, do you think it was really necessary to get rid of them both? Because it leads us up to another question that has been dogging the team all year, is that they're way over the cap. Was this a cap move? Or was this something to hopefully right the good ship Alouette?
Well, it couldn't necessarily be a cap move because most of their money was already paid to them and it's already counted against the cap. So I don't think it – I just don't see it actually being a cap move. I really think this was to send a message that, you know what, we're not going to tolerate any sort of shenanigans and – or a perceived lack of effort, because that seems to be the underlying theme, is that they didn't feel – like the coaching staff didn't feel that neither Carter nor Stafford – we're putting in forth much of an effort. And to that I say, well, what were you giving them to work with? I mean, I want to believe
Kevin
that
Glenn was their best chance. I mean, we got rid of our receiver who had the most receptions and most yards on the year. Mm-hmm. And most receiving touchdowns.
Yeah.
And most of those were with Kevin Glenn.
Absolutely. And again, you also saw what a calming influence someone like Kevin Glenn can be, whereas Rakeem Cato, I'm sorry, he's not a leader. He's not a leader now, and again, he's still young, but I mean, with each passing week, I'm seeing less and less. I'm less and less convinced that he has what it takes to be a professional quarterback. Mm-hmm. Again, serviceable at best. I can maybe see him as a decent backup and maybe a couple of years on the bench, like really truly on the bench to sit and learn. Maybe then, like, we might see him become a decent mid-range quarterback. But to be expected to lead and, you know, be the franchise for this organization? No, I'm sorry. It's just I do not see it happening. I just think he's been given multiple opportunities. And again, maybe that's on the team more than on him. But at the end of the day, he's just not producing. He's not clicking any more than what anyone else would be. I mean, I don't see any difference in his production versus what Tanner Marsh had or Josh Nieswander or, God help us, Troy Smith even. I mean, again, these were all quarterbacks that were.
I was about to say, I cannot believe you actually put Troy Smith into that same conversation with those two decent quarterbacks. Troy Smith was a horrible quarterback.
Well, there was once upon a time when he was actually a decent enough quarterback. But again, it all comes down to the system itself. And again, we're back to the same. We're back talking the same thing. The offense is freaking terrible.
Yeah, it is.
I don't care who the offensive coordinator is at this point. It's clear that it doesn't matter who the offensive coordinator is. This is just absolute dog as far as these plays that are being called, as far as the schemes that are being produced. I mean, there's just nothing here. There's just no substance whatsoever. And I don't care who the quarterback is. I think even Levi Mitchell would look terrible playing in this offense. Like, that's just how bad it is.
Yeah.
I don't think it's necessarily a knock on these quarterbacks. And I'm trying to be as fair as possible, saying that it's not all on them. It's not all on Rakeem Cato. It's not all on anyone else who's tried to lead this Alouettes franchise as quarterback. It's just a terrible, terrible, terrible system. And it just keeps getting worse and worse. I don't care who's in there. Again, this comes back to what I'm talking about, is the fact that they really have to do a complete and thorough cleansing of this team. I'm going to keep saying that probably a few dozen times tonight, is that you got to flush this. You got to
– this.
That's really what you got to do.
In the almighty words of Jack Nicholson in Batman, but not the exact quote, this team needs an enema.
Agreed. Absolutely agreed. So now we're in the situation that Vernon Adams is going to get his first professional start. But
it's about time, by the way. I mean, considering what they gave up for him and what we're not going to be getting this year, we're not going to get a first-round draft pick.
No, and in fact,
because we picked him up. That's what was grinding my gears so much the other day, when I was like, put him in. We gave up a first-round draft pick for him, and you have not put him in. I'm surprised nobody asked. At least I didn't see it in French media. I don't know if Herb Zerkowski asked. I sent something on Twitter. I said, Herb, you got to ask this question. You got to ask, why the hell was he not put in? Now, mind you, I didn't see his follow-up. I know he did just a generic recap, but I didn't read the actual – I didn't see the one that had quotes in it, so I had to go back and check it. So if you did, Herb, ask that question, and I didn't see it, I apologize. But again, you got to ask the question, you know? Of all people, I think Herb would have asked that question. It has to be changed. Something has to be done. I mean, it's very – you know, Alice could basically got to win out and get some help. If not, they are going to miss the playoffs again for the second straight year in a row, and it'll be this second longest streak. It's funny. For the first time since 82-83 that they missed the playoffs for the first time, two straight years.
And this is something that, like, current Alouettes fans are just simply not used to. I mean, this is something that you can set your watch to, was the Alouettes making the playoffs. Whether they won the division in the regular season or squeaked in third place into the playoffs. Like, this is something that was a foregone conclusion practically, was the Alouettes making the playoffs. And now missed 1 year of the playoffs. Okay, these things happen. It was bound to happen sooner or later. But now we're looking, like you said, at potentially another lost season, another lost opportunity to get into the playoffs. And yeah, I mean, this will not stand. I mean, people, you can't expect people to pony up for this quite frankly. I mean, this is just like, you got a team with a great defense and an absolutely terrible offense. And again, no matter how you want to rearrange the decks on the deck chairs on the Titanic, the ship is still sinking, man. I mean, you got to do something. You got to do something.
They needed to use Gorilla Glue. I still don't think it would have mattered. What's funny, by the way, the last quarterback, Al's quarterback, to get his first ever career start was Brandon Bridge last year. Hey, guess what team it was against?
The Saskatchewan Roughriders.
Same team that they're playing this week.
And who is the backup quarterback for the Saskatchewan Riders?
I wonder. Kevin Glenn.
No, it's Bridge.
Yeah, Brandon Bridge. Sorry, Brandon Bridge. I'm looking at the stats here, and Glenn was right below him. Yeah, Brandon Bridge. So I'm trying to check here. Crompton, his first start was versus the Red Black.
Yep.
Cato was versus Calgary.
Mm-hmm.
Troy Smith was versus Hamilton. Okay. So, and yeah. It's just, again, I agree with you. Something has to be done about the team going forward. Yeah. I just don't know. Now, you're going to be there, right? I think you're heading over to Taylor Field or Mosaic, whatever you want to call it, because I know a lot of people are trying to get, you know, to distinguish the difference between the two. And it's like with Rogers Center now. Some people will not call it Rogers Center. They'll always call it Skydome.
I'm one of those people too. I just don't dig on the corporate names, and it is still Mosaic Stadium for the most part. But yeah, I mean, it's you got to respect the tradition as well. I mean, it's still very much.
It's the new Mosaic Stadium next year.
Well, that's what's known as now, and I guess, you know, once the season starts next year, I guess it will
weird.
Be.
You're right, that is kind of weird.
A little bit.
New Mosaic. Yeah. So beyond what the Owls didn't do this week and what needs to be done. By the way, with all these changes that are made, do you think there's any way that we're going to get Billy Parker back in the lineup, or is he summarily done? I know we talked about him last week, but is he summarily done as an Alouette?
Barring injury, I'd say so.
Barring, yeah. I know it's. We saw a picture, I think he did an Instagram picture this past couple of days ago, I think it was yesterday, of him in Old Montreal. As far as I know, he's still in town, so he's not on the active roster.
Mm-hmm.
I still think he could have helped. I really, really do.
And again, I'll say that the defense really isn't the problem. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, it would be nice to have Billy back in the lineup. Sure, it definitely would be. But, I mean, it's like I talked about with the way these kids have been playing in the secondary. I just kind of feel like he's on the outside looking in, and that's unfortunately, like I said, barring injury or something catastrophic happening, I think that's just how it's going to be. I think now you're looking at the future, and this is something that people have often said is, you know, you can't keep playing the same guys over and over again. We've got to see something new. And again, in Montreal this year, you've been seeing that in the secondary. You've been seeing new guys, and by and large, they've been producing. So I'd say stick with it. I mean, would I like to see Billy back? Sure. Well, of course I would. He's a top-notch guy, and he's someone that is very much a fan favorite in Montreal. But at the same time, he may not even be with the team next year, whether he decides to take his retirement or maybe he decides to ply his trade in another city. I guess anything's certainly possible. I still think in his mind that he can still play in an elite level, and I'll go so far as to say he probably can. I still think that he is a phenomenal player, but at the same time, we got some good young guys on the secondary that they've been showing up each and every week, and I don't see that stopping anytime soon. So I'd say let the kids play.
I can just imagine. Hopefully, there'll be a good crowd for the home finale versus Calgary, and we can play 90 minutes. We still won't score a point. We can play 60 minutes and do what we did this past week, but yet let's have some scoring. But you know, this week it'll be telling. And I know there's some stuff that you wanted to mention that happened that we were going to talk about within the CFL this past week, which seemed to be quite interesting. And one of them that I wanted to talk to you about, and was more or less what we're talking about with Billy Park, not Billy Park, what could happen with him too, but with Daron Carter and Kenny Stafford, was with how the CFL, and I did not know this. You know, I would say that I'm pretty well versed in CFL, but I guess when it comes to the CBA stuff, I'm not up to that. I'm not to snuff really. But finding out, and everybody's talking about, and it's funny, many people reported it and then they had to retract saying, nope, we were wrong. The CBA actually, you know, with them gone, the Owls are not responsible for their salary anymore. It's something that's built into the CBA. Where, A, first, that their salary is not, it's not guaranteed. But the part that was in the CBA is that they can, sure, they can be signed by another team this year, but they can't play.
Mm-hmm.
People are on the fence about that. What's your opinion on that very interesting rule?
It is definitely an interesting rule. It's certainly not one that benefits the players. I'll tell you that right now. I mean, it was almost Machiavellian, just the way that this team decided that, okay, well, yeah, we're just going to release these guys because they may or may not be a distraction or cancer or whatever stupid word you want to use to describe them and their attitude, perceived attitude. Mm-hmm. But now you've essentially taken away their chance to go and perform for another team as a result, because they're cut. They're technically now free agents, and yes, they can sign with any other team, but because this move was done past the trade deadline, mm-hmm. they're not eligible to play. So is someone really going to take up cap space to sign either of these guys and hope that they'll be okay for next year, knowing full well that these guys will not see a CFL field at least until next June?
There are some interesting quirks. Yeah, the other interesting quirk too is if you pull somebody out in CFL, if you pull somebody off of their practice roster, they have to dress that week. Mm-hmm. They have to dress that week. I kind of get it why it's done that way. I mean, a lot of people are saying, well, what happened if you know, some if X team signs another player, a new player, can he play? Well, by the looks of things, yes, he can, because he was not on a roster, on an active roster. Sorry, I think that should be the term there. It's I guess it's like waivers. You know how it is when you, it's same thing with in any league, that if you don't go through waivers, I think same thing in the NHL. You don't after a deadline, trade deadline, there are non-waiver moves. Either way, they're put on waivers and they have to go through waivers without somebody claiming them in order before they can go down. You know, down to the minors, but there's no minors here.
Nope.
I think it is basically a waiver wire thing without having one. you know what I mean? It's
yeah, and just the fact too that yeah, like again, you could sign these guys if you wanted to. Like if someone wanted to, you could sign Daron Carter right now to your team, but you just can't dress him. You can't use him. You can't put his talents to use. You're essentially keeping him. It's like a keeper league in fantasy football. You got this guy. You may not be able to play him because he's on the IR or something like that, but you know that, okay, next year you're hanging on to this guy because you know he's going to be something special. But at the same time, you still got to pay him. That's the other thing too. So now essentially these guys are essentially what's happened is they're being paid to go away. And even then, not really paid because, like you said, there's no guaranteed contract. So any money that they've been given up front, that's pretty much it as far as salary goes from the Montreal Alouettes. So, like I said, it's a shrewd move on management's part just to – you're essentially telling these guys, okay, you know what? The problem is actually it's not us, it's you, and we just want you to leave. And, oh, yeah, no, you can't go play for someone else, so screw you. So it's kind of a jerk move a little bit from the team, but at the same time, it's kind of one of those moves that – like I said, it's a move. If you're going to make that move, you may as well, because
that's why I said I thought it was cost cutting when I said it earlier. That was my one reason why I thought it was that. But yeah, it's
well, and furthermore to the fact this alleged idea that Montreal is still $300,000 over the salary cap is I just have such a hard time wrapping my head around this. Like it's frustrating. Because I'm sitting there like, well, who the hell can we cut now? Like, who do we get to get under this alleged, you know, number?
problem is though, we see this thing. If we get fined and we're over and we lose our first round draft pick, we don't have a first round draft pick. Do we lose it in 2018?
I guess, or maybe take away the second round pick. I mean, I don't know. Like, I mean, this is
CFL draft is what, only 8 rounds.
Now it's eight rounds. It became 8 rounds last year. Okay. So, but I mean, it's one of those things that can potentially hamstring a team. But I mean, like I used to say that Montreal just had so much depth.
You can see that thing. You can trade up, but what are you gonna, you know?
Oh, well, that's it.
You know, BC's gonna get either way. BC's gonna get two choices in the first round next year.
Yeah, it's just a matter now of will it be the first overall pick or the second overall pick at this venture.
Yeah,
I mean, a lot can change in the next couple of weeks. I mean, if Montreal happens to run the table and still make it to the playoffs, I mean anything is certainly possible. But as it stands right now, like if the season were to end tomorrow, it would actually be the first overall pick for them, because Saskatchewan's got their act together, starting to get their act together. Mm-hmm. Toronto, even though they're in a terrible, terrible way right now, I mean,
Ricky Raitt's coming. I think he said he's going to be starting this week or next, but I don't know how that's going to go. I don't know how that's going to go.
And who's he going to throw to?
Yeah, mascot. Speaking of Toronto, it was announced earlier today, well, officially unofficially, I guess we could say, that the CFL has, or the, I guess we can't say this. Can we say the CFL or maybe Rogers? Either way. Argos have decided that they are going to be lowering tickets for the Grey Cup. Finally. Looks like they said, at least from what I understand, because the official announcement is not till Wednesday, that they're going to be lowering the prices basically half, I think 40 or 50% of the two lowest price tiers. Now, I know you go to Grey Cup. I know a couple of friends who go to Grey Cup. They've already bought their tickets. The big thing now is that because it's been announced, and so far rumors are saying that there's going to be no compensation, or there may be some compensation for some people, but I'm hearing there's going to be no compensation for a lot of the people that bought tickets, right?
That's kind of what I'm hearing for the most part, although I'm sort of trying to keep tabs on this, but it looks like some fans may get compensated, or at least be given the option to upgrade as a result, because the tickets they bought have now all of a sudden become a lot cheaper. But it seems to almost be like they're, I guess it all depends on which tier you purchased in. To me, it's a tough call to make, because as it stands right now, or as of even a couple of weeks ago, the stadium was barely half sold, which is very much a slap in the face to the Canadian Football League, because don't forget, in years gone by, the Grey Cup was sold out within minutes practically, and it was one of the hottest tickets, like especially all the way up until like the 100th Grey Cup. Like it was just a premier event. But ever since the 100th Grey Cup, things just started slowly dwindling down, and they were very fortunate to have played the Grey Cup the next year after that Grey Cup in Toronto, play the Grey Cup in Saskatchewan, where Rider Nation is, you know, rolling, and they managed to get into the playoffs, win the Grey Cup in front of their hometown fans. So of course, that's going to be sold out. But then the next year, go to BC Place, and they started struggling. And then last year in Winnipeg, that too, there was quite a few empty pockets, and then they had to kind of scramble to get those seats filled. And this year, I mean, with BMO Field and everything that was sort of put into making this a premier event again, they really, really shot themselves in the foot by pricing the tickets the way they did. I mean, it's not the Super Bowl. I mean, I'm not saying this to be disparaging, but it's the CFL. I mean, this isn't a corporate league by any stretch. This is supposed to be a blue-collar, lunch-pail, proud Canadian league. People are not going to shell out $800 for tickets. Like, to ask them to do that just because it's in Toronto, because of BMO Field or whatever sort of dopey excuses you're going to come up with, it's just not feasible. Like top tier tickets, I would say, okay, the best of the best tickets shouldn't cost more than $500, and then just make your way down from that price point. To try and price out fans like that and try to essentially take advantage of them.
Well, I'm hoping Ottawa's taking notice for next year.
Yeah, because and they've even come out so much and said so. In fact, they're even planning to even release Grey Cup tickets in Ottawa for the next year's game in Ottawa within the next week or so. So I mean, that's
what, not in August?
No, I think they're trying to capitalize, and good on them for trying to maybe think outside the box a little bit, because, again, especially with season ticket holders in Ottawa right now. Like, I mean, they've got a hot product. I mean, even if it's still not the best football they've played, I mean, like, they're the best team in the East, which isn't really saying a whole lot now, but
it's going to be interesting to try to get a ticket next year, I will admit, because considering they're almost sold out every game.
Well, and that's the thing, is that they've got such a hot commodity right now in Ottawa when it comes to Lansdowne and the whole football experience in the nation's capital. They've got something really, really good going right now. And is this going to translate into a sold out Grey Cup in a matter of minutes, hours,
right.
days?
Yeah, yeah. And to me, this is just a black eye. By the way, I'm on Twitter right now. They were actually with two separate letters that went out to people. Two separate letters. And their reasoning for doing this seems to be ridiculous. I mean, how they put it, it's like, but they have also told us that the pricing, what is it? I'm trying to read this here. Told us they need pricing that reflects the fact that it has been an unprecedented year in sports in Toronto, with major events such as the NBA All-Star Game, World Cup of Hockey, deep Toronto Raptors playoff run, the Jays playoffs, and the upcoming NHL Centennial Classic and World Junior Championship. That's a load of garbage. That's a load of garbage. And, you know, supposedly saying that the tiers, the high end and the middle tiers were sold well, but the other two are not. And we know that's garbage. These people are not getting refunds, and they should get an upgrade accordingly.
I absolutely agree. If you had bought in, and again, CFL fans are a very passionate, diehard bunch, and they want this league to succeed. And again, they bought in early, knowing full well too that this was outrageously priced. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, this is a championship game, but at the same time, it's still way too much money for the Grey Cup. I mean, I'm sorry. This is just, it's ridiculous, quite frankly. And then to go ahead and do this is basically thumbing their nose at these diehard fans that will do whatever it takes to see that the CFL is a raging success.
And it's bush league. This makes the Argos look like a laughing stock.
Well, I'd say there's a lot more things that make the Argos look like a laughing stock this. But this is just adding fuel to the fire. Essentially,
it kind of reminds me of what happened the first year for the Alouettes when they were back. You know, they were drawing flies at the Big O, and then they reduced the price. They started giving away two for one tickets, and it pissed off all the season ticket holders. So thank goodness the Wettenall family came in and bought the team. See, that's Bush. You can't do that.
No, and my biggest fear was that they were going to do something similar to that for this Grey Cup was, and I think it was back when, was it 2007 or 2006? They had like 2-for-1 tickets as well.
Yeah.
Because the attendance numbers were just laughable at best. I mean, again, this is a league that is trying so hard to establish itself and really make itself a viable commodity, and pull nonsense like this, and you wonder why people crap all over the CFL, why people look at and consider it like a joke. Well, can you blame them, really? I mean, like, I'm sorry. I do love this league. I love being an Alouettes fan, and I will support as much as I can. But at the same time, if you're going to constantly shoot yourself in the foot like this, like, what the hell do you want me to say? It's laughable. And to essentially do this to your diehard fans, like, and these are like not just fans of their respective teams. Like, you got like some of these fans, they will go and they will book off vacation time and they will spend their hard earned money just because they love this game and they love this league so much. And for the front office to essentially go and, like I said, thumb their nose at them is insulting. And you keep biting the hand that feeds. I mean, these are things that are going to come back and really, really have consequences, to tell you the truth. And I sincerely hope that the OSEG, Ottawa Sports and Entertainment Group, the owners of the Red Blacks, essentially, and now the hosts of next year's Grey Cup, I really hope they're paying attention with all this. I think it's a little bit too soon to be talking about selling Grey Cup tickets, but at the same time, I just hope they're paying very close attention to what's going on in Toronto and this whole kerfuffle with this year's Grey Cup. And I hope they learn this lesson, and I learn it very well.
Kerfuffle.
It's a word. Google that.
Yeah, I know. There deserves to be a better word for this, for what's happening right now in Toronto, Toronto right now in this Grey Cup debacle. You know, just like the team this year, and same thing with the Alouettes. You know, it's a giant cluster. It's really what it is. I mean, I they need to be compensated accordingly. They do. And I hope they do. Because yeah, if you go look, and I've retweeted it, if you go over to Repact, REPPACT on Twitter, if you follow the thread, there's actually two different letters that was sent out to these ticket holders. It's a double standard. It's a double standard. If you hadn't screwed up and set your prices way too high and you're blaming it on all these things that are coming up or have happened, come on. Look when you started selling your tickets for Grey Cup, August. Raptors were done. Blue Jays had been done at the time, you know? I don't know if everybody really would call the World Cup of Hockey a success. And also because of the game that's coming up, the centennial game at BMO, come on.
They're excuses. And quite frankly, I've always excuses are like assholes. Everybody has one and they all stink.
There you go. So I hope these people are done right. I really do.
Yeah, I agree. I think, like I said, these are not the fans you want to piss off. These are not the ones you want to steal money from. And that's essentially what it is it's theft. And quite frankly, it's going to come back and bite them. I'll tell you that right now. Like I think this league.
Class action lawsuit right there. Bing.
Well, I don't see that happening. That's just not Canadian, but.
Oh, come on.
No, I don't see it happening. But one thing I do see happening is sooner or later, everybody's got the breaking point when it comes to things like this. I mean, how many diehard Alouettes fans do you know have given up on this team because of certain moves that were made or certain administrative things that just rubbed them the wrong way? Well, I mean,
the first two home games ago, you had the bandwagon because of Coach Chapdelaine. Where we were over 20K, which was nice. That was Thanksgiving. But we'll have to see what happens now.
Yeah, and again,
18K? Well, 18K. I'll call it right now, 18K. For the home finale versus Calgary.
Well, I hope you're wrong. I do hope that Alouettes fans realize that this is more than likely going to be the last chance you'll see them this year. And let's hopefully send this team off on a good note. And it's not going to be easy because they'll be playing Calgary, who just completely dominated them a week ago.
Yeah, the Alouettes only gave up 22 points, though.
That's true. That's true. I mean, again, so much can happen. I mean, that's the beauty of football, is that it can all turn on a dime. And just when things are looking their absolute bleakest, one or two things go the right way, and then all of a sudden you're back in the game. And that's the thing, is Montreal is still I still can't believe it. They're still in this. They still have a chance, a slim chance, mind you. I mean, like you had said earlier, they're going to have to win out and get some help along the way. I mean, it's absolutely unbelievable, but we actually need Ottawa to win against Hamilton this weekend. And that'd be great, but also, too, Montreal has to win as well. They have to go into Saskatchewan, not the most friendly place for them, and they're going to have to win. That's all there is to it. I mean, and the Saskatchewan Rough Riders, they've been eliminated from the playoffs already, so they don't care. They're looking towards next year already. And despite the fact they've got quite a few injuries, quite a few people on their 6-game list, I mean, they're going to want to come out and really show out. If they can spoil the party for Montreal, so much the better. And that's the mindset you got to have if you're the Rough Riders. And I fully expect to see that on Saturday.
The Owls are 17-18-1 at Taylor Field / Mosaic. 500. And, they're 2-4. Dating back to that fantastic overtime game in 2010. So the games have been close. We'll see what happens.
And that's the thing. I think Montreal, they always have a chance. It's really going to come down to now what can Vernon Adams do. And he's going to be given the chance now. I have a feeling that Chapdelaine really likes what he sees in him. And he made it very clear that in addition to cutting both Daron Carter and Kenny Stafford, he wasted no time in naming Vernon Adams as the starter for this game. And is Adams going to be ready? I sincerely hope so. Like I say, it's not going to be the easiest environment, but I mean, like I said, the kid's a gamer. He played really well.
They already had to practice in the snow this week.
Oh, there you go. If that doesn't strengthen your resolve, I mean, gee, what will?
So let's talk before we finish up, and we'll talk about this week's game that you're going to be attending. Don't forget, if you want to contact Cliff and myself, there are many ways to do so. But don't forget, we are on social media. We're over at Facebook. We are over on Twitter. Facebook is at Alouettes Flight Deck. It is Alouettes FL Deck on Twitter. Myself, it's Repact, R-E-P-P-A-C-T. Cliff is Cliffy D on Twitter. If you happen to miss any of our shows or want to head back and check everything out from our inaugural season, you can do so by heading over to Podbean, iTunes, or Google Play Music. And if you're over at iTunes, then you can give us a thumbs up. Be greatly appreciated. We want to make sure that you're enjoying the game. You're enjoying the show. You're enjoying the show about the games and about the Owls this year. So what can we expect from the Owls? I know we're talking about, you know, Vernon Jr. is going to be starting. We are going to be less two of our – we're going to be less our leading receiver on the team, which some people may have said was a cancer, but we're also less one other. What's your thought on the game this week?
Well, I guess it's all about seeing what the new guys can do. I mean, like I said, Vernon Adams is going to be starting as quarterback. Receivers, no longer, of course, Kenny Stafford or Daron Carter, are now being replaced by Tyquan Underwood and Marcus Henry, both activated from the practice roster. So I guess pair those guys up with B.J. Cunningham and Sam Jaeger and Nick Lewis, of course. I can never count out Nick Lewis, that's for sure.
No, you can't.
And B.J. Cunningham, we've talked about it all season. The guy is just on the rise. And if nothing else, like losing, in my opinion, losing Carter and Stafford are serious blows. But as long as we've got a B.J. Cunningham on this team, at least we have a capable pair of hands there. Sam Jaeger, I've been kind of hot and cold with him, but I mean, for the most part, he's been a workhorse. He's been doing what needs to be done. So I'm excited to see what could possibly happen. Right. We'll have Brandon Rutley's going to more likely be getting the start at tailback again.
Yeah,
I haven't heard anything about Tyrell Sutton.
Yeah, Tyrell Sutton, yeah.
So, like I said, but at the end of the day, this offense has to click. It really does. I mean, the defense comes to play each and every single game, and that's what's really frustrating is that, God, you almost wish these guys could score points, but that's not their job. Their job is to prevent points. But
yeah, and this is the game. I remember I said that I thought they had the possibility of going 2-2 to finish off the season. And you know, obviously, I think they need to run the gambit now in order to even make the playoffs. Or I'll be calling the Owls to get get my refund on my season tickets for the playoffs. you know, we saw what Cato did in his first start ever. It would be nice to have that type of result with Vernon Adams and see something. But you know, just like with Coach Schaap, one game does not make career. Let's just hope that he plays well. He gets everybody plays a full 60 minutes.
They're just gonna have to listen. By hook or by crook, they're going to have to find a way to put points on the board. I mean, and Saskatchewan is a team that, despite all of their woes, like I said, now they're on a five-game winning streak right now, which seems absolutely...
They're doing what we did 2 years ago.
Yeah. Unfortunately for them, it was too little too late. And, of course, playing in a very tough Western Division, it didn't do them any favors. But, I mean, like...
Three weeks left and the crossover is already decided. So the Owls have to basically win out because I think if the Owls lose this week, Ottawa clinches the playoff spot.
Well, Ottawa's clinched their playoff spot. They can finish no worse than second.
Okay.
But if Hamilton wins, then that's pretty much for the Alouettes.
Okay, that's what it is.
So like I say, it sounds weird, but we're going to have to actually cheer for the Red Blacks this week to beat Hamilton. That would essentially clinch the division for Ottawa. And then we've got to, like I said, we've got to win out. We got to hope that Hamilton keeps on losing without Zach Caleros.
Be interesting.
And then that game, that last game of the season in November at Tim Hortons Field would in theory be for that second place spot.
That's right.
And like I said, but again, let's not put the cart before the horse. Montreal has to win and it has to start this Saturday against the Rough Riders.
Yeah. So have a safe trip there, Cliff. I hope you enjoy it. I'll have to make it out to Saskatchewan one day, whether it be Taylor Field or the new Mosaic, but I hope you have fun. Shout out to all the guys at Piffles Pod.
Yeah, I just want to say really quick. I was talking with those fellas and gal, of course, and we've pretty much decided that we're going to do either a Periscope or a Facebook Live from the tailgate at in Regina. So keep an eye out for that. Like I said, follow me on Twitter at Cliffy D. We haven't decided how we're going to do it yet, but we're gonna have some fun with these guys. Do a little bit of cross promotion, if you will. So. Nice. If you get a chance, definitely go and check out the Piffles podcast. You can do that, again, on Twitter, at Piffles Pod. They're on SoundCloud. They do some great stuff over there. And I'm very excited to actually see these guys in person. I've already been on their show to talk Alouettes football, but now to actually be there live and kind of party at their place a little bit, I'm excited. So shout out to those guys and gal, and I'm looking forward to seeing everybody out in Regina as well.
Enjoy the games this week, Alouette fans, and just keep up the faith, and hopefully this is just a glitch where we'll be able to right the ship hopefully very soon. So so for everybody here at Alouette's Flight Deck, for Cliffy D, I'm Tim Capper. We're on Final Approach.